We're beginning Mishneot Gittin, and the word get in Hebrew really means a shtar, any legal document. When we use the word get, we usually refer to a document of divorce between a husband and a wife. Now, this concept of divorce is really an introduction for the Jewish people. Just like Kiddushin, the sanctification of marriage, is an invention of the Torah. Prior to the giving of the Torah, if a man and a woman wanted to live together, and they wanted to cease their relationship, they ceased their relationship. And when the Torah was given, so the Torah told us that there's a procession, there's a way in which we get married, and there's holiness that, and you can't just break up when you want to. You're together for life, unless the husband or wife passes away, or there's a divorce, and then there's a divorce contract, which the Torah tells us at the end of the 40 years in the desert, in the book of Devarim, in Parshas Ki Tse, the Torah tells us, "Va'yayim lo timtachin beinav," and it will be, if she does not find favor in his eyes, "ki matza ba'o vatavau," for he found something disgusting about her, "v'chatav la sefer chritut," he will write for her a writing, a book. Sefer literally means what we would call a book, but it means on parchment, written the way a Torah would be written. And this is going to be a work that is keritut, breaks between him and her. V'natan biyada, he places it in her hand, v'shilachami beito, and he sends her from his home. So the Torah is very descriptive about how the divorce takes place. And from this verse, we really derive 10 halachot that are very important and will disqualify a get, will disqualify a divorce if we don't have all 10 of these details. Number one, the Torah says, "Im lo timtzachin beinav," if she doesn't find favor in his eyes. So from there we derive that he can only divorce her at will. If someone puts a gun to his head and says divorce her, it's not a kosher divorce. And that's why some of the prenuptials, that depends on what the prenuptial is, but we have to take care that it doesn't put him in a situation where it's against his will. He has to want to divorce her. So that's number one. Obviously, there are many, many details. We're just beginning. Secondly, the Torah says that he writes her a divorce contract. So from here we derive that the only way to divorce is by writing something. If he tells her, "Get out of my house, you're divorced, we're divorced," whatever he says, that doesn't help. It has to be a written contract, right? There has to be a written divorce document. Three, it says, "V'chatav la," or write her. From here we derive that the get has to be written for her sake. Meaning it's not enough that you just write, "I'm divorcing my wife." Let's say a guy has 10 wives. No, it has to be written for her name, for his name, and for the sake of divorce. Meaning, let's say you have a small town, you have 50 residents, the sofer is bored, he doesn't know what to do, so he starts writing a practice get. He says, let's say that couple, they always fight my neighbors, I'll prepare a get, just in case, for them. So he sits down and writes a get. And then, lo and behold, 2 days later, the guy comes knocking at his door and says, "I've decided to divorce my wife, write me up a divorce contract." Well, that contract wasn't so good because he didn't write it for his name and her name. He did make-believe. Let's say they'll want it. You have to do it for the sake of him divorcing her and the sake of real divorce. Fourth thing, it says sefer chritut. So sefer, we often understand, means like sipur, a recounting. So from here our sages derived that within the divorce contract, it has to explicitly state that there is going to be a break between him and her. And it has to be told over clearly that that's what's happening here. Kritut has to be totally cut. Meaning there can't be any details left hanging over. Let's say he says, we're going to see it later on, let's say he says, "I divorce you on the condition that I never visit Uzbekistan. If I ever visit Uzbekistan, the divorce is null." So it's not a kosher divorce because there's always that looming threat. Has to be unconditional, right. Has to be a total break, clean cut. Which if you think about philosophically, yeah. Vinatan. So from here we derive that he has to give it to her or he sends a messenger, but she can't take it from him. He writes a divorce contract and she says, "Good riddance," grabs it out of his hand. That's not kosher. He has to willfully give it into her hand. Biyada, in her hand. From here we derive that it has to come into her possession, either into her hand or into her property or to her messenger's hand, but it has to be given to her possession. Let's say he says, "This is a divorce contract, you're divorced," and throws it into the fire. No good. Has to go over into her hand. Vishilecha, he has to send her out of his house. So that goes in the divorce contract, that he has to say in the divorce contract, "I'm sending you and you are permissible to marry other people, you're divorced from me." But he can't say, "I'm hereby divorced from you." Meaning the divorce has to be in the terminology, just like I took you into my house, I put my arm around you, I put my wing over you, I've taken responsibility for you when I get married, so too, when we get divorced, I'm sending you away from that. But it's not a situation where, let's say he writes, I'm hereby divorced from you, or I hereby want to have nothing to do with you. All that isn't kosher. It has to be that the terminology is v'shilecha, he sends her. It says in the Torah, Kimatzaba ervat davar, he found something disgraceful, v'katav, and he will write. So from here we derive that davar often refers to, in monetary issues, we say that whenever you have davar, whenever you have an issue, so the Torah says, al pi shnayim edim yakum davar, you need two witnesses to substantiate something in monetary issues, and there we use the word davar. So from here we derive that you need two witnesses for the divorce contract to be given. The Torah says, v'chatav, I'll write her the divorce contract v'natan, and he gives it to her. So it has to be a divorce that from the minute he writes it, he can hand it over. Let's say he writes a divorce contract on the horn of a bull, which used to be a way of making something permanent, like the Greeks made us write on the horns of our bull, we have no portion in the God of Israel. That was a way of like, even on the bull you plow with, we put a mezuzah on our doorpost. The house we live in says we believe God is singular. We believe he will pay us back for what we do. So the Greeks, their way of doing it was writing it on the horn of a bull. Well, you can't give the horn of the bull over to her. You got to cut her off and then give it to her. So that's not ready to be given over. The divorce contract has to be written in a way that it can be given. And the last thing is that...
So if you write it on a bull's horn and then you cut it off...
That's not good, because there was a pause. There was a necessary pause. It has to potentially be that you can give it over right afterwards. And the last point is, the Torah says, you write a book of divorce and you give it in her hand. So from here we derive that it has to be given in the form of a get. Meaning, let's say he is uncomfortable. I don't want to tell her I'm divorcing her. So he writes on the back side of the get, he writes a mezuzah. That doesn't disqualify it. But here's what he does. He plays a trick on her. He says, honey, you moved into a new house. I want to give you a new mezuzah. Open it up when you get home. She looks at it. It looks like a nice mezuzah. She takes it. When she gets home, she opens it up and sees it's a divorce contract. It's not a kosher divorce. It has to be that when he gave it to her, he gave it to her with understanding. You are hereby divorced. It's given for the sake of divorce. So we just went through 10 points. Let's quickly review the pasuk and the 10 points we said that we derived from this pasuk that are critical for a get to be kosher. The pasuk said, "V'haya and it will be, im lo tinzachen be'enav, if she will not find favor in his eyes. Ki matzava ervat davar, for he found something disgusting about her. V'chatav la sefer keritut, he writes for her a book, a writing of cutting off. V'natan biyada, he'll give it in her hand. V'shilcha mibeiton, he'll send her out of his house." So he said, im lo tinzachen be'enav, it must be that she doesn't find favor in his eyes and he willfully divorces her of his own free will. V'chatav, he writes it, from here derived that the only way to divorce a woman is with a written contract. Number three, it says la, for her name, for the sake of divorce, for his name. It all has to be written for lishma, for that sake, for that purpose. Number four, we said sefer kritut, that in the writing it clearly says that there's cutting off between him and her. There should be no strings attached. Number five, vinatan, he gives it over to her. From here we derive that the husband or his messenger gives it, and not that she takes it out of his hand. Number six, we said he gives it in her hand. From here we derive that it has to be in her hand, her messenger's hand, and her property, but it has to be given over to her possession. Vishilicha, he'll send her away. From here we derive that in the get you have to write that he's sending her, not that she's sending him. That it's he's sending her from under his responsibility. It says he found something disgraceful, daval v'katav. From here we derive that need to be two witnesses to see it. Number nine, v'chatav v'natan, that there has to be that from the time of writing to the time of giving, there's nothing else that has to take place, meaning it has to be prepared for giving over at the time of writing. We gave the example that he can't write it on the horn that's connected to the animal's head. And number ten, keritut v'natan, that she's only divorced if he gave her the divorce contract for the sake of keritut, cutting off. It has to be clear that he's giving her this divorce contract for cutting off between him and her. And with that introduction, let's begin our Masechet. We'll first read through the Mishnah, because I think it's important to understand what each word means. And then we'll define it, and then we'll read through the Mishnah again with the understanding that we have. Okay? I think that's the best way to learn a Mishnah. That way you know what the words mean, and then you understand what the words mean, and then you review it with the understanding. The Mishnah says, "Hamevi get mimdinat hayam." If one brings a get, which we already know is a divorce contract, Mimdinat Hayam. Mimdinat Hayam literally means the city out in the sea, which is a reference to all of Chutzlarts. Mimdinat Hayam sometimes means a faraway land, land that's not so close by, but we're going to see that over here it's a reference to all of Chutzlarts. Sarich Sheyumav, so the person who's bringing it, which we're going to see is the, he's the messenger, he was sent to bring it over, so he has to testify before us. When he brings that divorce contract, he must say, Bifanai Nechtav, Uvifanai Nechtam. It was written before me and signed before me. I'm bringing this divorce contract, and I myself saw that it was written and signed. And the Gemara, we're going to explain that, what's the importance of that? There are two understandings that run throughout the Mishnayot. What is the importance of this testimony? And from the Mishnah, it would seem that this is a single person, Hamnevi, singular, he who brings. So this is also unusual. Since when do we believe a single witness? In Judaism, we always require two. So that we'll discuss a little bit. So
he's not a witness, he's just a messenger.
Ah, so then why does he have to testify? What's he saying? He's saying,
find out it was written.
He says, I saw it written and I saw it signed.
By to it, like, makes sense.
Okay, let's see. Maybe, I mean, it should make sense. It does make sense at the end of the day. Let's see. Rabban Gamliel Omer, Rabban Gamliel says, even someone who brings from these two cities called Rekem and Cheger must proclaim, I saw it written, it was written before me and signed before me. And we're going to have to see what's the chidush of Rekem and Cheger. These cities maybe were right adjacent to Israel. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanah says, Afilu mikfar Ludim leLud, even someone who brings from the village of Lud to Lud. And the rabbi said, the only one that has to bring to say it was written and signed before me is the one who brought it from Medinat Hayam, which we'll translate now loosely as Chutzlaretz. You know, Medinat Hayam always has the connotation of some faraway land, the land out in the sea. The Hamolich, and let's say someone brings it from Eretz Yisrael to Chutzlaretz. Or one who brings from city to city within Chutz La'aretz, he too must testify, it was written and sealed before me, written and signed before me. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says, afilu me'agmonia le'agmonia, even from one rulership to another rulership, which we'll see is within one city. Let's say it's like East Berlin and West Berlin. So you have one city, but it's ruled by two different rulers. So even then, you have to declare it's written and sealed, signed before me. Okay. So, Medinat Hayam over here is reference to all of Chutz La'aretz. And there was a marked difference between Chutz La'aretz and Israel. In that, in Chutz La'aretz, they had courts, they had leaders, but they weren't on the level of the rabbis in Israel. So, even though they were teaching, but sometimes you had courts that were not as well versed as the courts in Israel. And the courts might have written a divorce contract and not written it for the sake of this specific woman. Now we learned in our introduction that a get not written but not for this specific woman is disqualified. So you could have a situation where the woman thinks she's divorced and halachically she's still a married woman, she'll get remarried and the children are mamzerim. So this is a very serious issue. So the rabbis instituted that when the messenger comes, he can't just be someone they called off the street and they say, hey buddy, you're traveling to Israel, do us a favor, bring this get to so-and-so. The rabbi said, if you're going to send a messenger, that messenger has to be someone who is present and saw its writing and its signature. And when he comes in, he must testify, it was written before me and signed before me. Now what's going to happen? He'll walk into court and he'll say, I have this divorce contract, I was sent as a messenger and it was written and signed before me. Once he says that, so we'll start talking to him. And we'll say, hey, you were there when they wrote it. So do you know, did they write it for this woman? And he'll say, yes. And then we'll know that it was written correctly and we could divorce the woman with this. So that's one understanding in the Gemara. That the reason they instituted this was to ensure that it's a kosher divorce. So to ensure that it was written lishma, for her name. The other understanding in the Gemara is that between Israel, within Israel, you have no problem. There's constant travel. If you want to verify something about the divorce contract, you just go there and verify. But between here and Chutz La'aretz, you got to cross through different countries, and there could be times of war, and there aren't caravans going so frequently, so it's not so easy. So let's say this woman gets a divorce contract and she'll get remarried. And her husband is a troublemaker. He'll show up in town and say, I never wrote that divorce contract. Who gave her permission to go and take from my wealth? Who gave her permission to get remarried? I never wrote that. So the rabbis were concerned for troublemakers. So they said, if I have witnesses around who could validate the divorce, so then I don't have to worry. He'll walk in and the witnesses will say, you're a liar. This is your signature. We know it's a true contract. But if there are no witnesses around, so what am I going to do if the husband walks in one day? He sent it from Chutzart. He sent it from Alabama. How do we know it's real? So on the one hand, we want to free the woman. On the other hand, we have to protect her. The husband won't be able to come in and start playing games. So the rabbi said, we will trust the messenger as though he were two witnesses. Ordinarily, we say, you need two witnesses to validate something. Here, the contract is kosher. What's the whole issue? That maybe he'll come in and make claims. So for that issue, the rabbi said, we'll trust the messenger as though he were two witnesses.
And isn't that at least any dangerous consequences of that?
Well, they check him out. They check out the messenger. They ask him. And really, ordinarily we say, ed echad neman b'isuri. One witness is believed when it comes to prohibitions. How could you guys eat at my house? My wife made the food. How could I eat at my house? My wife made the food. Who said it's kosher? So we say that there are two concepts. One is, lo etchazik isuha. This isn't a situation where I know there was pork here, and someone walks in and says, no, that's kosher meat right now. If I walk into the room and I put down a piece of meat that's non-kosher, I walk out and I come back a minute later and my wife starts cutting a piece and says, here, have lunch. So I say, what do you mean? That was non-kosher meat. I put there. She says, no, I brought in a new piece of meat. It only looks the same. So that's a situation where itchazik isuha. I know there was something prohibited there. Now, we want to change from what I know. There was itchazik, it was strengthened, like chazak, isuha, the prohibition. There was There was a validated prohibition, and now I want to change the state. I want to tell you, no, this isn't the prohibition. So that's one case. But in a regular situation, your wife serves you food, so she says it's kosher. Of course you believe her.
Yeah.
That's called ed echad. One witness is ne'eman, is believed, bisuin. When it comes to prohibitions, this isn't testimony before court. This is regarding a regular prohibition within your house. The same thing is true with this guy. He's a messenger. He wants to give the wife her get, and he's telling her it's a kosher get. Ordinarily, we should believe him. What will you tell me? Itchazik isuha? What do you mean? This is a situation where I know she was a married woman. He's changing from the status that was a known status. A minute ago, she was a married woman. He's saying it's kosher get. But nonetheless, we should really believe him, because I have a kosher get here. The rabbi said, because either I'm worried the external court didn't write it lishma, because they weren't as learned as the courts in Israel, or the other understanding is because I'm scared the husband will come and make hanky-panky, so they made this halfway institution. They didn't force the courts from Chutzarts to send it with two witnesses. That, I guess, would be too hard. And on the other hand, they said, the one messenger you do send it with has to be able to testify before us that I saw it written and I saw it signed, so we could verify it was done properly. Clear? So let's review the Mishnah, and then we'll go on to the other opinions. Hameviget, if one brings a divorce contract, Mimdinat Hayam, from Chutzarts, from the cities out in the sea, he must declare, it was written and signed before me. And once he says that, so we'll ask him and he'll validate that it was also written lishma for the sake of this woman. Or the other understanding is, once he validates that the contract was written, so he's also validating the signature. And then if the husband tries to make hanky panky, we won't accept his claims. Because this witness basically said, I saw it signed and it is a kosher signature, it's his signature. And the reason they were concerned about get that comes from Chutzaretz is because it's not so easy to get to Chutzaretz. The husband comes and makes claims, till we can validate his signature might be a problem. Rabban Gamliel Omer, Rabban Gamliel says, Afa mevi minarekem uminacheger. Even someone who brings a divorce contract from these two cities who are right near the land of Israel. Rabban Gamliel says, these two cities are right on the border. So you might think they don't need to testify that. What's your concern? According to the understanding that you can't get there, well, they're right there. You could get there and validate the signature. According to the understanding they aren't learned, well, they're right near us. They probably learned well enough. No. Rabbi Gamliel says the institution is, once you cross the border, you have to testify. So even if you bring from Rekem and Cheger. Rabbi Eliezer says, he goes even further. He says, even from the village of Ludim to Lud. Now, the way the village of Ludim was built was, imagine this is the land of Israel. So the village of Ludim is right here. And the land of Israel extends beyond the village of Ludim. So it's surrounded on all three sides. You have Israel on its right, Israel on its left, and Israel in front of it. And you have parts of Israel that are further away, right, than the village of Lud. But bottom line, it's outside our border. It's outside our territory. Even in that situation, says Rabbi Eliezer, you would have to testify, b'fanai nechtav u'fanai nechtav. B'chachamim olim, and the rabbi said, eino tzarich sheyomar b'fanai nechtav u'fanai nechtav, ela amevi mimdinat hayam. The rule is, only someone who brings it from chutz l'aretz that's distant from the land of Israel. Medinat Hayam, when Chachamim say it, they mean the distant chutz l'aretz, not the close by chutz l'aretz, like Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer. V'hamolich, and someone who brings a divorce contract from Eretz Yisrael to chutz l'aretz. V'amevim imdinat imdinat b'medinat Hayam, or someone who brings it from one city to another city in chutz l'aretz, tzarich shumah b'fanai nechtav u'fanai nechtam, he too must declare that it was written and signed before him. Yeah? So that's clear. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says, afilu me'agmonia le'agmonia, even from two different rulerships within a city, once you're passing their border, between one rulership and another rulership, you have to declare you saw it written and signed.
One. Chachamim, if it's close,
then you don't have
to say it. But what's the definition of close?
Oh, so that's, at this point, that's undefined. When we read the Mishnah, we don't know. The Gemara will have to define it. Okay. Should we review the Mishnah one more time? Or you got it down pat? You're fine. Okay. One more Mishnah, or we'll pause here?
It's a small Mishnah.
Okay. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda says, whenever we have Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, it's who? Rabbi Yehuda, if I'm not mistaken. So Rabbi Yehuda says, from the city of Rechem all the way to the east, you have to say b'fanai nechtav u'fanai nechtam. V'rekem, in the city of Rechem, kamizrach, is also like the east, meaning from the city of Rechem you also have to declare it was written before you and signed before you. He's giving us cities that are the border. Rechem itself has the law like it was in the east. Meaning, from there on, and what about the city itself? The city itself is also like, from there on, like the east. And now he's going to go to the south. Mashkelon adarom, from Ashkelon southward, you must declare b'fanai nechtav u'fanai nechtam. The Ashkelon, and the city of Ashkelon itself, kadarom, is like the south. Meaning, Ashkelon also has to say b'fanai nechtav. And it's included, right. Me'ako la'tzafon, from Akko to the north, the Akko katzafon, and Akko has the din like the north that it also has to declare.
Defining the borders of where Eretz Yisrael.
Right. Rabbi Meir Omer, Rabbi Meir says, Akko ke'eretz Yisrael la'gitin. When it comes to Gitin, Akko is like the land of Israel, they know their stuff, they're easy to get to, they don't have to declare, but fanai nechtav u'fanai nechtam. Okay? Now, in truth, what we'd have to do is, if we're learning a little bit more, with more time, then we'd sit down and write what's the difference between Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Eliezer, Chachamim, and the first Tana and the Mishnah. That needs definition. Meaning we ran through that, but we have to understand, wait a second, on what are they arguing? Are they arguing? So that, in our session, we won't do that for lack of time.